The real estate market is booming. Whether you look in the suburbs or the city, Chicago continues to expand, creating incredible opportunities for those in the know. We'll connect with Chicago's real estate moguls to bring you the wisdom and expertise to help make your next real estate move a lucrative one on the Real Estate Mogul Podcast.
How you guys doing? I'm Tony Arce, and this is the Real Estate Mogul Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Dave Nimick. Dave, I appreciate you being here, sir.
Great. Thanks for having me.
You were born and raised in San Francisco, right?
Yeah. I was born in San Francisco and raised in Marin County, just north,
about
15 minutes north of San Francisco.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I'm saying it just the way we say we're from Chicago when really you're from like the suburbs or something, right?
Pretty much.
Gotcha,
exactly.
Gotcha. But both parents are from the East Coast originally and decided to make their way out to San Francisco your mom at least, for better weather, right?
Right. My mom moved out from Long Island. She could not stand cold weather. She went to Brown in Rhode Island. And after a couple of years in Manhattan, she was done with the snow. So she moved out to San Francisco in her early 20s on a one-way ticket by herself, just a single woman, flew out and just figured she'd make it. And God bless her for it. So she moved out in early 50s to San Francisco. And my dad grew up in Pittsburgh.
Right, right. Yeah, and you were talking about your dad. Very interesting story. Drafted at 18, on his 18th birthday, right?
He was. He was drafted on his 18th birthday. And so went through that whole process and went to war in Europe and actually was a prisoner of war for about a month.
Wow. Right. What an incredible story. Incredible man.
Yeah.
Very grateful for his service.
No, it was quite something.
Yeah. And then he after the Army, went out to visit a friend in San Francisco, right, and who happened to live across the hall from your mom, and that's how they met.
Exactly. So he met my mom, and you know, they fell in love, and he was writing her letters way back in the day in the late 50s, early 60s, and then, yeah.
That's awesome. So what was life like out in... Is it Marin County, you said?
Marin County.
Okay. What was life out there like?
It's a nice area. I mean, it's overall very similar to probably the suburbs here in Chicago, several of the suburbs. Good education, good schools, and lots of activities. So it was a great place, place to grow up.
So what made you move to Chicago?
Well, it's a funny story, actually. A college roommate of mine, I went on a trip called Semester at Sea in college, which was an outstanding trip. So one of my roommates from the trip lived in Chicago, and I ended up going to like a wedding in Fort Wayne. And I was like, I'm coming to Fort Wayne, which was fine. I went to a wedding, but I'm like, I'm coming to Fort Wayne before I ever went to Chicago, which is one of our greatest cities. So like a month later, I booked a flight out to see my buddy in Chicago, and he lined up everything that he knew I would love. So like I went to a Cubs game, like I'm a baseball fan National League fan. So, and he lived in Wrigleyville. So went to a Cubs game, then went to a bunch of street festivals. It was July, rode the bike along the lake, you know, like introduced me to all of his friends. And he had like a three bedroom, he and his roommate had a three bedroom apartment. It was a garden unit, but they were using a third bedroom as like bicycle storage. So I always accuse him of like, he had this planned all along where he's going to have me out for a week. And then right as he's dropping me off at the airport, he's like, you know, you should think about moving here. And I had already been like, I'd had such a good time that I was like, I think I might. And so
how long was that time that you were here? Like, how long did that period last?
I was here for a week, and 6 weeks later, I quit my job in California and moved out to Chicago. I didn't have a job. I knew him and then the people that I had met who subsequently became good friends of mine. But
at least a place to stay.
I had a place to stay, and it was cheap rent. You know, I was paying $250 a month, which I could afford.
And it's in Wrigleyville, right?
It was in Wrigleyville.
Yeah,
so
can't afford it. You don't see those prices now.
No, it's changed quite a bit, but that it worked out well, and so that's how I ended up coming out here. So I didn't have a job, and I knew one guy.
Yeah.
So
what was your first job when you finally did get one?
I worked at Enterprise Rent-A-Car. So I ended up working there for...
You spent some time, right?
Yeah, that was 7 to 8 years. So I, great company, worked my way up. I became kind of a district manager. there. So I oversaw several offices over the course, you know, after about 4 years. And yeah, no, it was a great, great company. I ended up, during that time, I bought a multi-unit. So I bought in Wrigleyville, actually.
Oh, no way.
So I kind of got the bug for real estate and what have you. And it, yeah, so.
So that bug, did it stay in that, you know, single purchase, or did you kind of add to that portfolio before you decided to jump full in and make real estate a profession?
Well, I think I just owned that one, and then I became a realtor, and then one of the first transactions I had was buying another multi-unit also in Wrigleyville. So,
well, save yourself that commission, right?
Yeah, no, it was income at that point.
Yeah, true.
So that ended up working out pretty well. But I kind of morphed into it because I had the corporate background. I think some of the challenges that some people who get into real estate have is a lack of structure. Mm-hmm. And I had a corporate background, so I knew kind of the structure. Because you work for yourself. You don't have that structure. You can sit on the couch all day mm-hmm. or whatever.
No one's going to tell you what to do.
Right.
Yeah.
So I kind of had, fortunately, the experience of having some structure with work. So I just kind of took that structure and put it into real estate business.
It's interesting. I mean, I think I would argue 90%, maybe even more, of realtors didn't start out in real estate, right? They had a job before. So what, from a just a translation standpoint, what translated over from those skills that, you know, you had in corporate that translated very well into an entrepreneur approach to real estate?
Sure. Well, I think it helped first, even before that, when I was in California, I had my own business. It only lasted a year and it didn't do very well, but it was character building.
Oh, no way.
So that I had that experience prior to even working at Enterprise, but I had kind of, Enterprise is also entrepreneurial within the corporation. Sure, so it was a real good experience. But
and that's like more through the franchise model type, or
it's not franchise; it's privately owned. But it they give a lot of autonomy to the people in management whatever.
Nice,
so,
nice.
But managing, looking at spreadsheets, analyzing the business, making business decisions, and just setting up your day. Yeah. Like days when you work for any corporation, it's like here's what your day looks like, and you understand why. Like here's what you're going to do, and here's how it helps the business.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of really helped me hit the ground running. And I knew from talking to friends who were realtors and other people I'd met that it's not like some people that haven't done their homework who get into real estate mm-hmm. think it's swimming pools and movie stars and, you know, grabbing a cup of coffee and business rolls your way.
And cameras following you around. And, yeah.
And, it, you know, if you're coming in at the right time, business can happen for a while, but if you're really going to do it long term, you have to build it and work really hard up front. And so I started that way.
And you knew that, though, going into it.
Yes. And so I started. That was the foundation. And I started early 2001. So it was before 9/11. That was the year that I started in real estate. So, yeah. But you just, for anyone getting into real estate, it is not something that you take lightly,
yeah.
You know, and yeah.
At the time, were you single or were you already?
I was single. Yeah. Yes.
So it made it a little easier to transition, but nonetheless, still having to overcome a lot of the same hurdles that everyone else does, regardless of, you know, where you're at in life. But what was that like for you in terms of the challenges? Like what was the biggest challenges you faced?
Well, it was interesting because I left the job at Enterprise, like I was doing rather well there. And so I leave that to go to this 100% commission, you know, real estate gig. And people, and again, I was doing well at a job that people don't usually leave. And people are like, what are you doing? And I had a voice just saying, you should go into real estate. I'm good with people. I'm like, it's in my DNA to negotiate. Like, I absolutely love negotiating.
Interesting.
And I have a good story that we can touch base on in a minute. But it worked out. It worked out very well to kind of morph into real estate.
Yeah. Where did the passion for negotiation come from?
So while I was at Enterprise, although nothing to do with that job or company, I had friends who were looking to buy a car or whatever, you know, it's kind of people in their early to mid 20s. And I found it interesting to actually study up on the cars they were going to buy. Like I'd find out what kind of car they're going to buy. And then I would study up on, they didn't ask me to do this. I would just study up on the car they're going to buy and then offer to go with them to the dealer to negotiate on their behalf.
Just for fun.
Literally for the sport of it. I'm getting nothing out of it. And I absolutely loved it. So I did that for, you know, four or five people. And they're like, you need to utilize this in, you know, full time. Like you need to do this full time. And so after I heard that several times, plus owning real estate and liking physically going into properties and looking at properties, that type of thing, it just lent itself to going into the business.
Yeah. No, even as you say it, because, you know, you hear of a lot of people going and doing stuff on their own and they may not have that skill set in terms of negotiating. And, you know, as you're saying it, it almost like, for me, is anybody out there that needs me to go negotiate for you? Like, I love that too, right? Where it's right. that interaction with someone. And it's not that it's confrontational, but I think if someone's non-confrontational, that can seem like a very stressful situation, right?
Well, and it is funny because when you're talking to several different people, not realtors per se, but other people when talking about the negotiating aspect of real estate, and some clients are like, oh boy, I can't stand that. I'm like, this is like
what I get up for.
I literally meeting new people and negotiating is like exactly what I was born to do.
That's awesome. So now I got to ask, have you read Never Split the Difference?
I have not. No, I've never read a negotiating book. I just, that's where.
Yeah. Yeah. It came natural to you.
Yeah. I didn't realize it. It's not like I had a bunch of other jobs where I was negotiating a bunch of different things. It just kind of, maybe actually the one thing that where I had experience with it was on that semester at sea trip in college. I was fortunate enough to go on where we ended up going to a bunch of different countries and I learned how to barter.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, where you're going there and people are offering their wares, you know, at a bazaar or whatever. And I distinctly remember in Morocco, myself and a couple of friends negotiating for leather jackets, these really cool leather jackets. But they were, you know, kind of like, here, they're $400 each. And we turned around and we're like, thanks. And, you know, and but this the sport, do like remember, going through that.
Do you remember what you ended up paying for?
I think we ended up paying like $35 a piece. And it was just like... We were high-fiving, you know, doing whatever. This was 30 years ago, but it was so much fun to really go through that. And that was just by accident. We just kind of fell into that. But I was like, it was a sport that I was, from that point, I knew I enjoyed it. And then throughout, that was early in the trip. So then I had several other opportunities in different places to kind of, you know, take advantage of the sport of negotiating and buying stuff. And
I would love to hear your thoughts on that book, just from that perspective of you already having some of those skills that, you know, just come inherent to you that don't for a lot of people. The way I started the conversation too was I really just appreciate your demeanor, right? And this calmness, this coolness about you, where some of the views you had. I mean, you know, my condolences. I know you just lost your mother, you know, during COVID, but even, you know, the way that you talked about it, it was so eloquent. But you can tell there's a lot of wisdom in that. And you can just sense that that's the way you approach even those deals, right? That it almost seems like people don't know what they're getting themselves into when they see you.
Well, overall, I think for as a realtor, it's really important to be unemotional, or at least for, like, we're there to do something for the client. Like, right. It's our responsibility, not just kind of an idle passing. But if there is, even if it's contentious, you know, I don't take things personally. I don't get wound up, you know, with other realtors, because realtors are doing, I mean, it's pretty simple. One realtor is supposed to be doing what's best for their client, as long as it's ethical. And I'm supposed to do the same, right? So if we're working within those boundaries, then it's my clients, they can be emotional. And it's real estate. It's where you live. It's either what you want to buy and live there, or you've lived there and then you have memories of the home. So people are naturally emotional.
Absolutely.
So it's important for the realtor to maintain kind of not be emotional, not be taken away by the emotion. Understand that it's there, but kind of be the grounded one. So yeah, it's, I guess it's just part of my nature as well.
And also not react to the emotion more than anything else. I think what you're saying that, you know, it's okay to have them, but just don't necessarily react from that standpoint.
Right. Don't be reactionary and just kind of work with them. Understand, especially that your clients are going to have them. I even tell my clients, like, it's fine for you to be emotional, you know, and it's important for me to present it in such a way where it's kind of like, you know, because negotiating is like a dance.
Yep.
You know, it's give and take. You don't know where it's going to go. So yep. I never can guarantee, like, this is exactly what's going to happen.
Absolutely.
But you can talk through and when something happens that is not very appealing to the client, then it's understandable if they're going to be emotional about it.
For sure. Now, you know, I think a lot of people who are listening could easily say, yeah, same thing. You know, I love Dave's demeanor and the way he handles things and his approach to business and negotiating, but I just don't have that demeanor. I don't have that personality. I wish I did. Right. But if there were some actionable things in terms of just the way that maybe the thought process, the mindset, when those emotions do come up, like how do you just put them to the side, or how do you, you know, react from a different place versus that initial, you know, gut pulling emotion
as a realtor,
as a realtor in life? Just, I mean, just in, I would assume that they don't differentiate too much between real estate and the way you approach life, but yeah.
Yeah. Pretty true. Okay. Yeah. I think with the role in real estate, it's definitely knowing your role and being comfortable with your role and being able to explain it. People, you know, clients don't go through this every day, right? And so when you're talking to them throughout the process, whether it's the negotiating process or anything else, it's out of the norm. So having empathy for their situation, yeah, and explaining, like, I'm very good, and I always try to say, like, here's what's going to happen next, because people don't know, like, you know, unless they do this every day,
yeah,
they're not familiar with it. So explaining that to them. And yeah, overall, I think just in general in life, being able to roll with the punches, like, I'm not sure. There's not some, like...
No, there's no formula that you can follow, per se, right?
Right, but overall, it's just kind of like, what's most likely to happen in a given situation? You know, I don't dwell on it, but I probably give it some thought. So when something occurs, it's not, like, completely out of left field. It's probably, yeah, like, something that I figured would have happened. So, yeah, it's just kind of a...
And what you think, this is something that just came naturally to you, or is something that, you know, you saw in your parents or you taught, maybe someone that mentored you? Where did this kind of approach to relationships come from?
Well, I was a communications major in college, so it's probably a combination of all of those things. Yeah. I can't say it's one,
sure,
specific person or class event or anything. Yeah, there wasn't one particular event.
So you're just born this way.
I guess.
No, that, yeah, and you can tell, like, some things just come natural to people, and others, they have to work at it. And the fact that you haven't even read a negotiating book, but you still come in, you're saying that's your the thing you love doing most, you know, is a testament to that. So, you know, I know, again, going back to recently experiencing loss with your mom, but and handling that very well, how do you think you just generally handle those difficult situations in life? Because I'm sure this is not the first time, you know, obviously the first time mom and all that, but not the first hardship you've gone through in life. And obviously you lost your dad 30 years ago too. Just, you know, take me through that, because that's one of the things I really want to connect people on, is those struggles. We don't have to go through them alone. And when someone has been through something like that, if someone listening is either going through it or is about to go through it, that, you know, you, like, just take away something from that they can, you know, apply to their lives.
Well, I think I was fortunate enough to at least know in advance that each of my parents, you know, with some advance notice, like, my dad was not healthy. And so the last year of his life, it wasn't like he was going to live another 30 years.
Yeah.
So I remember the doctor actually, he had one time, like, a year before he passed away, when it was like 50-50. And that was probably one of the roughest nights of my life, because my mom and I were at the hospital the whole day and night. And he ended up surviving. But the doctor actually said, just make sure, even after he got out, you know, he got out of the hospital, said, just make sure to tell your dad how you feel, you know, just be open with your dad and spend as much time as possible. And at that time I was living close by, but I wasn't living at home. And I had a good relationship with my dad, so it wasn't like there were major things to patch up or whatever. Yeah, yeah. But I made sure that he knew that I loved him and cared for him and had, you know, those types of conversations. So there wasn't a lot of regret.
Sure.
And I always had a very close relationship with my mom as well. So it wasn't, again, there weren't things to patch up. It was more difficult because I wasn't physically able to see her or give her a hug for a year. Like she died during the pandemic. And I was able to see her during last summer, but it was 10 feet away. You know, I can't hug my mom.
Yeah.
You know, and so that, and I'm not the only one that's gone through this stuff either.
Of course.
But I was able certainly to let her know that I loved her and cared for her. So if there's anything, you know, just communicate with your loved ones, you know, and just tell them how you feel. And I think hopefully most people have the ability to know if death is coming fairly soon, they know ahead of time so they can say that. But don't hold back if that appears that way.
No, absolutely. It's I appreciate you sharing that. And you know, I do think, especially hearing the way that you approach it, it sounds like the biggest thing is you don't live with regret because, you know, you did some of those things that I guess you wanted to do, right? That you made sure that you did them and kind of had that peace within you. But even for myself, I know that sometimes we beat ourselves up over, you know, the littlest thing, right? And just dwell on it and say, I didn't do this or I could have done that. But sometimes it's just not in our cards, right?
Well, I think, right. And the things that you can't control what happened in the past or whatever. And I, you know, I think like jealousy and regret are things that are just going to eat at you and not serve a real purpose. And depending on how much time you focus on them, they could, you know, cause serious, you know, health issues or whatever.
Yep.
So I've consciously made an effort to not, you know, not focus too much. Like I don't regret things. I haven't done too many things that I would have serious regrets for, but overall you don't spend, it doesn't benefit you.
Yeah, I think I heard you say that too before. It's just the dwelling on something, and it's not something you dwell on. Now, is it just you make a conscious effort of it to say, I'm not going to think about this? Or just.
No, I think decades ago, I realized there's no benefit to it. So it was an active decision then. It's more subconscious now, where it's just kind of like.
Are you sure you're supposed to be in real estate and not be some guru? Do you meditate even?
I have, not too often, and I think it's, you know, however someone is spiritual, whether it's meditation or whatever, is probably very healthy, so.
Which is, you have, like I said, there's a very calmness about you that, you know, we didn't talk about that, but it's just, I had to ask, because that's almost like what you would expect the result to be of someone who did, right?
Yeah, I suppose, but it's I guess it's just my normal demeanor. Works well for the business I'm in.
For sure. Now, you know, ideally, you know, in a world where obviously people are looking to buy or sell their home, they should be calling you, right? But you know, anyone else in terms of the people that you want to connect with, the community that you want to grow, who listening should be reaching out to you?
Well, to be honest, I mean, I really enjoy talking with people, and I'm not the cheesy used car salesman, realtor, you know, here's a business card type of thing. It's just not my bag.
Yeah.
I do love the sense of community. So I look at myself and the people I know, like I have a pretty sizable database of people that I know.
Yeah.
I love to communicate with them. I like to be of service. And I think enterprise taught me well, the business I was in before that taught me well. And I think my natural inclination, has been to serve people, and when you serve people well, they will be happy with the service and they'll tend to refer. And I knew that when I first started. Yeah. I knew you earn the business, you earn the reputation, and when you do that, people will be happy to refer you.
Yep.
And so that's kind of been the carrot for me, to make sure that you do a good job because you want to earn those referrals. And I've been fortunate enough to have a business almost entirely based on referral from past clients, either, you know, past clients working with me again or referrals. And some people, you know, it's, I like being the mayor of that type of community.
Yeah.
So, and it's a community of people that I know. So it's not just like one particular neighborhood or whatever. And some realtors focus on that and focus more specifically geographically. I'm more of like whoever gets introduced to me or whatever. I like to be of service. Like I'm always telling people, I was saying this to clients yesterday, like it could be 3 years from now. If you need a plumber, a painter, a HVAC, like I have a really good short list of people. And it's not even just real estate related. I know attorneys sure. and whatever, but if you have a need, I want to be that resource where you just call up and say, hey, I bet Dave, you know, I like to be the, I got a guy, you know, I like to be the resource.
You're what the kids call the plug. You can plug people into things.
Right. Yeah. And I'm not doing it to get something out of it. I'm doing it because I enjoy being able to give you a good name of someone who, especially with the trades, for instance, like someone, I've been a landlord 25 years and I've been a realtor 20 plus years. Like I have a good list of people that I know are not going to take advantage of someone else and they're going to do a good job. So I love supporting those businesses who run their business similar to mine. And I like making it easy. I like to be that resource.
Well, I appreciate that. And if you're listening and it sounds like, you know, Dave is that guy for you where he can connect you or show you a couple properties or sell yours, I would encourage you to reach out to him, fill out the form below. That'll go right directly to him. But Dave, I really appreciate you, you know, being vulnerable, sharing these stories, and just being a part of our community.
Great. I really appreciate being a guest. Thank you very much.
No, I look forward to the next time.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.